Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
And welcome back, folks, to another fun-filled week.
You monster.
I am. But it's the best time of the year. It is the best time of the year.
Are we talking about the interminably rainy but still 80-degree season?
No.
Pumpkin spice everything?
No. We're talking horror.
Spooky.
Exactly. This is the best time of year.
My life.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's how I live mine. I mean, yeah, I was actually talking to somebody the other day, and they're like, oh, it's my favorite time of the year. I can get pink or what was it like? Orange nail polish. I'm like, well, number one, you live in, you know, Knoxville, so you can always buy orange nail polish here. I said, but no, this is the time when you can buy black nail polish because
actually,
I'm an
you can get some
old
real cool
school
black.
Goth.
Oh, you can get, you can get, there's black nail polish out there now that after it dries, it kind of cracks, but it's still smooth on the top. So it kind of has like that shattered glass look.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I keep black nail polish and nail polish remover around for general utility.
Duh.
Well, I used to wear it, so.
Well.
I say the number of, you know, pieces of supposedly black wood that got dinged up that need a touch-up.
Yeah.
Sharpies, too. Black Sharpies.
Yep.
I like the nail polish better than the Sharpies. It sits, it especially is better on wood because it takes a lot sometimes to get the Sharpie to sink in.
I have the super uber fine points, but the other thing is also is that usually around this time, a lot of the like do-it-yourself, do-your-own tattoo kits kind of go on sale, especially a lot for, you know, because do it for kids and stuff like that, you know. So I do that so I can, I do like massive circuit patterns, and I've given myself like a temporary tattoo choker thingy. And they all go on sale, and right after Halloween, everything is so much cheaper.
November 1st, or the cheapest per ounce cost for candy in the year.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Now, okay, as we've kind of done a little bit of collapsing horror in Halloween, I want to get your stances on a controversial topic.
Uh-oh.
Candy corn.
Depends.
Horrible thing.
It really depends.
Best thing.
Well, I mean, the thing
ever.
Is, like, there's different brands
okay,
of candy
so
corn. But, right, candy corn vodka is disgusting. But there's certain types of candy corn that are actually quite nice.
No, we will not.
You know, it depends on the brand.
Candy corn's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, candy corn's awesome. It's my favorite of the candies. It's a danger
because...
or something.
No. See, now I'm going to say something. This is horrifying. Do you want to know what true horror is? Those peanut butter candies.
Oh, wait, are you talking like... Wait, what peanut butter...
The ones that come in the orange...
Oh, I like
those. And the
those.
Black wrap, wax wrap.
Those things are great,
especially,
you know, you put them in the freezer, and they freeze up really good, and then you smash them with a hammer and put them on ice cream. Now, I thought you were going to say circus peanuts, because those things are... I don't know what horrible pits of hell they spawn from...
Well, actually, it's the sixth layer, I believe, over in the northeast quadrant.
It's not far from where snowballs come from, yeah. in my opinion.
You monsters. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well. So if you can't tell, we here at Seize the GM really like our Halloween and horror themes. Some of
so
us
much so
more than
that
others.
This entire month is going to be devoted to that wonderful and rich but often mm-hmm. underserved genre mm-hmm. of role-playing games.
Yeah.
You've been warned. You've been warned.
Because it's one of those right. things.
So if this kind of stuff, you're not a big fan of horror at all, or kind of like it's really not your bag, you're going to have a wait. Yeah.
We'll understand if you come back in a month. I was going to say, we'll understand.
Yeah.
We'll see you in a month.
Yeah, which, you know, we'll be talking about other standard, normal things that aren't horror.
Eventually, they're going to let us do a whole month on superhero role-playing games.
We will.
Yeah, I'm going to let you guys handle that one.
We will do that.
Like I said, superhero stuff, not my strength. At least the RPGs. I love the comics, and I've got a lot of them. I even have, I don't know if you guys remember the Max, but I have the original on those.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as we go through horror, we're going to kind of set out a horror primer. This whole month is kind of horror 101, and that gives us something to build on in the future because all of you like us. You really, really like us. So when you come back next year and the year after and we keep going, we're going to be able to refer back to these four episodes as the horror basis.
Yeah, because that's kind of really what you need is you need to have the foundational fundamentals of what you can do with horror. And it is a very interesting genre because you can do almost anything in it. It has that level of versatility to it.
Well, horror fits into so much. I mean, horror, you have a horror fantasy. You have dark fairy tale. Sci-fi horror. I mean, if any of you guys ever played like Dead Space or watched Event Horizon or something like that, that's sci-fi horror. Horror can fit into almost anything.
And and we're kind of moving past banter to our main topic. Do we want to just dive into it?
Yeah.
All right. Here's the thing about horror. It can fit almost anywhere because the different kinds of things that identify horror aren't tied to a specific setting. Science fiction has a specific kind of setting. Urban fantasy has a specific kind mm-hmm, of setting. Mm-hmm. Even Gothic horror doesn't necessarily have a specific setting. Instead, it's a darker fiction that has horror and romanticism. It, as a genre, as a way of describing something, horror is more about tone than it is about settings, and so you find ways and places where you can include it
in a game. Yeah, and tie it. So fundamentally to it that it becomes impossible to differentiate where the horror and where the other, you know, separate. Yeah,
but the thing is, though, also that horror specifically, if you go and kind of boil it down to the quintessential, you know, what is horror? One, it's the most personal thing, and it's not universal. I mean, there are certain things that are kind of in our zeitgeist now that can be seen as scary. But if you go over and look at some of the things that, like from Japan, like the Japanese, like the yokai and those type of monsters and what have you, and the oni, for us, you know, we're not raised, it's not part of our culture and stuff like that. We might not find them as scary. Same thing also, or, you know, like certain people in Japan, they come over and see a slasher fic, you know, they might not find it as funny. It's one of the weirdest things, but in the same vein that horror is, it's built from a lot of things we kind of build up in ourselves when we're kids. And it's sometimes it's the strangest, like certain Japanese horror won't scare us. But certain things like Ringu might scare the ever-loving daylights out of you. And especially since you're coming from a different cultural, that uncanniness, that unsettling is already built in because you don't know everything about the culture and it'll scare the pants off of you. On the other side, though, you get something exactly, you know, kind of like, you know, like from here. It's just like everyone knows the video game Five Nights at Freddy's. Want to know why it scares people, like at least me, like crazy? Because I remember the early animatronics. I remember Chuck E. Cheese. I remember, you know, early Disney with those creepy animals. And you see them partially disassembled and you're looking at them and they're, you know, where they live, especially when they're being assembled and disassembled. It's that uncanny valley that I know so well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's what Jules touched on, is that it's about evoking in the audience the deepest terrors or shudders of life. It's about forcing some level of confrontation with that fear and that terror.
See, where one of the fundamental pieces of horror is horror as a general rule is never universal. Horror is always personal. Because one thing you guys have each said is, you know, like culturally, yes, the Japanese see things different than we do, blah, blah. But in actuality, it's literally just personal. All horror is personal.
And that is, some people read Cthulhu, they're not scared. Yeah. They're not scared of Cthulhu. But some other person might be. You know, it's
part of it's also the time.
Damaged. Mm-hmm. But it's also what damaged you. What damaged, when was like, horror usually starts, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, you're scared of nothing. And then, you know, you slip and fall and you scrape your knee and now you're bleeding and it hurts and you remember that. You know, it's little bits of damage. And it's, damage is, everyone always has this horrible connotation, but it's that kind of thing that kind of shapes what are we scared of, you know? Were you chased by a dog when you were 5 years old and now Cujo scares the ever-loving crap out of you?
The book scares everyone.
You know, or were you rescued by a dog and you look at Cujo and you start giggling? It's that kind of stuff.
Well, and there are deeper existential fears as well that can be evoked. And like Zen was alluding to, it comes down to the individual's response, but there's some things that we can kind of identify together. And, I mean, there are multiple kinds of horror. I kind of touched on gothic horror, which has capital R romanticism involved, that has not necessarily the supernatural, but the mysterious. And everyone in the Western world and possibly beyond recognizes the iconic gothic horror stories.
Well, the thing is, like, those are the timeless type of monsters. You know, Frankenstein's monster, you get, like, Dracula. But the thing is, like, those were, if you think about it, it's like those started coming about, like, as, you know, Dracula was, okay, you know, like the whole Victorian sensibility crap you have to deal with.
Well, it's the capital R romanticism part that came around that time, and as that the gothic component plays into it, and it's those are striking in our mind. We also, there's a strong influence of the supernatural. It isn't required. There are ways to do horror, kind of what I call the mendacity of horror, without the supernatural, but that is far more likely than not when you talk about it. And fighting the supernatural, seeing paranormal elements, is a way for the audience to feel out of control and at the same time to personify real dangers, real metaphorical monsters they have to face, which is honestly part of the point of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, is personifying everyday horrors and terrors and struggles in the form of the supernatural.
But the thing is that everyone's always thinking, you know, supernatural. But the here's the big thing. Biggest thing with horror is a way to feel disempowered. You're weak. You know, it's a way to not just, you know, okay, monsters like personified, like greed personified, hate viral, stuff like that. But it's also a way to kind of confront your own weakness. In horror, you are not, and I'm not talking Doom and stuff like that, okay? You're not a run-and-gun hero. You are weak. You can't. You know, you're not going to pick up, you know, an AK-47 and just waste all the aliens. You know, you are probably, it's a way to actually see how weak in this thing you really are. Like, no, you know, call a Cthulhu. No. It's like they ram Cthulhu and they can't do anything about it.
Because there are different ways. That's a very simple way to force horror, and that's a mechanical thing. We will be getting to that.
That's a theme. It's actually more of an aesthetic. Is, you know, a lot of horror settings take place in a place that is isolated, or that the terrain itself, the landscape itself, the area itself is not hospitable to where you are.
Yeah, what Jules is saying is right, that part of that confrontation with what terrifies you, with what you're afraid of, involves limiting your agency. And it is done through a lot of ways, like the location.
The Thing.
How
John
many
Carpenter,
times?
Was it The Thing?
Let's think about
it.
The Thing in the Arctic base. Jaws, where you're trapped on the ocean, surrounded by Jaws. Event
Spaceship.
Horizon, which I think is going to be one of the ones we reference
alien.
A lot.
If we're talking monster scares, Alien,
reasons.
You know? Not Aliens, Alien, the first one.
I think that's one we'll talk about next week when we're talking about maintaining tone and mood.
Yeah, but it's like if you want to go just like full, a good feel for, you know, where it, yes.
Physical limitations. And your ability to comprehend what is happening limits your agency. Be it being faced with the supernatural and going, I have no idea how someone walks through walls, what do I do? Or even if it is something more like Scream, where you don't know where something is coming from. There's nothing inherently supernatural.
And here's the best part, though, is also our own brains, our own minds. We are the scientific method and all the wonderful rational, mostly qualifier. You know, we like to logic and ration and all these wonderful things is like, okay, now if in a horror thing you see something that you really can't explain, your own, hey, this isn't supposed to be, is working against you, because logically you're like, well, that's not normal. Things can't walk through walls. We haven't mastered quantum tunneling and teleportation kind of a thing. Da, 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 da. You know, so the thing is, you're getting this weird dichotomy of, you know, the rules of the world, even in a fantasy world, you know, there's certain things that are, you know, within the world that are allowed and not allowed. And in horror, your own rational, the rules aren't applying. And it's a kind of, well, am I crazy? Because what you see is like, and then you're fighting against it. It's this, you know, if you saw a ghost and like in real life kind of a thing, you're like, you would probably start doubting your own sanity because, well, ghosts don't exist usually, you know what I mean?
I had Event Horizon was fine. I had it figured out. It was a mendacity of horror. It was non-supernatural. Everything was fine. I understood it. And then there's one moment that made me throw my hands up and just kind of yell at the TV. And you've seen it, so you know exactly what moment it is where it's finally like, that's it, I'm done. For those of you who aren't watching, who have not seen it, who are listening along at home, watch Event Horizon this month after the sun goes down. And then join us on our Facebook group, or find us on Twitter and tell us your reaction to the movie Event Horizon.
Yeah, the other thing, you want to know one of the creepier things also is, all right, I'm going to bring up video games because that's one of the other things I like doing. There's a game, BioShock, okay? Now, the thing that normally is all the monsters are splicers, because that's how one of the main characters says it, and you always hear them ranting and garble, and it's creepy, and it's just like, because you'll hear them babbling nonsensically, and they're these horribly deformed, and they used to be like normal humans, horribly deformed, and then you go into this one area, and the splicers are dead silent. So for the entire time that you've been fighting all these splicers before, you know, you always hear them, and they're loud-ish. You can hear them, so you know somebody's around. But when you get into this one area, everything you know about the splicers, and they're going to, like, chop you up. You go into this one area, and they are dead silent. And it creeped the hell out of me.
Changed expectation.
You know, and I'm freaking out.
Expectation, which is an element of horror.
And the thing... Yeah, because I had come to rely on those audio cues to finding out, oh, where the enemies are. So I started to feel, okay, I'm a little bit better. And this was just an incredible hard right. And I was playing, I'm kind of like scooching myself up. And Zippy gets home very late from work one night. And I had no idea. And I didn't notice him coming in the door. And he slams the door. And I freak the ever-loving shit out. And I throw the controller halfway across the room and scream. Because I was so into it, and I was so just wound up, you know. And that's kind of like the immersion thing you want to get with horror, is you want people to be able to almost, I don't want to say ignore, but kind of phase out the outside world, the world that you know, that, you know, it's like, I know where I put, most of the time, I know where I put my keys, or I put my keys in the refrigerator, I'm a doof. And I know where my socks are, and I know where the remote to the TV is or something. But the more you draw them in, the more they phase that out. And sometimes, you know, if things are right, you know, outside noises and startles can really just drive home that how far in you really are. And it really actually helps actually when you think about it and reflect back on it again. And that's one of the things I love with horror, is if you're able to do it, and it takes practice, so you're not going to master on the first try, and believe me, I bungled this a lot, but figuring out how to use stuff in, you know, in your real world, you know, when people really start, and you see it, they're leaning in, and they're holding on your every word, and they're talking to the other players, and they're hanging on everyone else's every word, and you know, you can hear the breath kind of start to speed up. And you know what? You scoot your chair back just a wee bit, and that scrape. You know what that does? It's amazing. But it takes time, and you have to figure out, and the thing is, it's attention release cycle, and you start to learn that as you start doing horror a little bit more often. You know, how you can use, because of that buy-in, and because people want to, in a way, experience real fear, but in a safe environment. And a lot of people are like, oh, I hate horror. Is it because, you know, where do you want to go?
Well, and that's kind of two of the other things I want to make sure we get to, is something we're going to talk more about coming up, is the nature of horror is... And the game is going to be partially defined by what someone's looking to get out of it. And the different kinds of horror that we kind of, the kind of overall super-arching genres. You've heard us say before, but that's a whole other show. Many times, and just scratched the surface. But we've mentioned gothic horror, which has the capital R romantic poet connotations that build into it. We've mentioned the impact of the supernatural. We've mentioned what I call the mendacity of horror, which can be a lot of the ones you think about, like the classic movies, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like Scream, where the horror and the components that go into it, the jump scares, the tension release cycles, all of that build is being done with non-supernatural means. Now, one kind of caveat one. Yeah, The Hills Have Eyes. One warning here. If you want to do a serial killer style horror game,
oh yeah,
do your research. It's really easy to make caricatures of what is truly terrifying, which is the human condition and the way in which humans have acted. And you and your players deserve
a cardboard cutout, because you don't want that.
A hackneyed attempt.
Yeah. But sometimes, I mean, there's sometimes it's fun to do like a horror, I don't want to say, like a horror light, like a caricature on something. And here's the thing, that's okay too. That is horror. It's not what most people think of horror, but taking those horror elements and kind of blowing them up, caricaturizing them, and then you can kind of pull back and pull back and pull back, and then you're able to, as they dive deeper, you're able to actually distill why they're scary in the first place.
Yeah.
Moments of levity are almost required. The tension release cycle that Jules was mentioning, laughter literally breaks the ice. And actually, you'll see this in a lot of serialized Japanese storytelling, where over the course of a series or a season, it starts with more comedic components and kind of sets the stage and the theme and the stories, and grows into the more dramatic, more horrifying parts while still calling back to some of that earlier work. It's okay to have that, and it's okay to break it up with laughter.
Because if you don't actually have those elements, all you're doing is escalating either violence or tension to a point where eventually it just has to stop, because you can only go so high and drag that for so long before it becomes so unrealistic that it's not horrifying.
That's one of the reasons I didn't like Hostel and that series, and that's one of the reasons why. It didn't
have a cycle.
Modulate.
It was ramp,
feed.
And the thing is, as you ratchet up tension, ratchet up anticipation, and if you can just, you know, jump scare after jump scare and horrible things after horrible things, you know, you can actually, it stops being scary and you get so used to it, and it becomes, the horror becomes the mundane, because that's your new baseline. You have to make sure you are able to pull people back down to that, I'm not scared, before you can start ratcheting them up. You know, you got to kind of modulate, you know, make them feel safe, and then, you know, somebody throws in a fart joke.
Yeah.
And then you hear that noise. You're not sure where it came from. And it kind of echoes. You don't know where you're going. Mm-hmm.
A little more than it should. That sound just exactly follows you.
So that's the one thing, is you can't keep scaring your players. And here's the thing, and if they start cracking jokes, and if they start doing you know, you're like, why the heck are you doing that? But the thing is, like, but if they're still enjoying it, it means they're scared, and that's actually, you know, cracking jokes, breaking the tension. They've already instigated, okay, a release cycle inside the thing. Let them run with it. Okay, and actually bring up a couple things. It's just like, hey, you know, Johnny's running through the things, and as he's running, you know, they all stop to catch their breath, and somebody cracks a joke, and then someone else, you know, I love using the fart joke, because, you know, fart jokes, as crass as they are, can be very funny. You know, and it's just like, all right, roll your stamina. You failed. You fart. The fart you've been holding in all day, and just, the thing is, when they start it, you can take that as a clue that, okay, let's build up that release and just really just let them all go. Yeah. And then you're really to ratchet above again. It's kind of a way, it's like, you know, you are pretty much a puppet master when you're doing a horror, but you have to know the limits of your puppets.
Yeah.
I'm terrible, aren't I?
Sometimes. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we can literally talk about this for hours. So.
And we actually do.
Yeah. So we're going to call this
three more episodes coming up
right here. And the next one that we're going to, there we go. So we're going to talk
setting and maintaining tone and mood for a horror game.
I'll take lead on this too.
I hate you.
You.
Well, the thing is, it's really weird how Zen and I, we both love horror and we both can run it, but we're very different in how we do it. And the one thing, it's like, unfortunately for Zen, you can't do one of my most horrible, evil, monstrous tricks. Your voice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which we will share with
all
of you.
Yeah, the one, like I said, I have one trick up my sleeve that no one else here can do.
That's fine. So we are going to go ahead and slide right into our lovely, lovely stat blocks. And now we enter stat blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
You know, that tension and release curve we always talk about, that last block, that's a really good auditory representation of it.
You.
Okay, so who's going first? Not it.
I will go ahead and go first.
All right.
I think this may be the shortest one I've done so far, but the Razor's Edge. The Razor's Edge is a cliff on a far-flung island that looks and feels like a tropical paradise. It has a sharp cliff face jutting out over the ocean with a truly picturesque view. It's a hot spot for Instagram-worthy selfies, and you've probably seen it in your feeds. Now, every so often, a strange shadow appears over someone's shoulder. The more fanciful claim, it looks like a ghostly face stalking the tourists. When your friend goes missing on vacation, all signs point to the Razor's Edge as the last place he or she was seen. When you try to take a look, you don't find anything, and that's the strange part of it. It is perfectly and precisely manicured with no indication of all the visitors that have been there over the years. Pristine and beautiful. Oddly so. Can you find out there's a cult maintaining this area for its beauty? That the cult is venerating a wild creature that lives not far from the cliff face? And what is this wild creature? Is it a simple predator like a big cat or a Komodo dragon? Or something more? Legends going back centuries state the creature protects the island's residents, but maybe this is just human depravity in the Instagram age. And where does that shadow come from over their shoulders in those pictures?
Nice.
Sick. Nice.
Very nice. All right.
All right, Garner Moshe, you choose who goes next.
I choose Jules.
I had a feeling. All right. Sorry. All right. I've got something called the Gleet. The world is full of mischievous but not malignant spirits. There's a Coblin Eye and Knockers of Wales, which are actually known as Cousin Jacks in Nevada and California. The Kobolds of Germany and the Duende of the South America countries, just to name a few. These sprites would steal tools from miners, make mischief in the house, and get humans lost in the forest. But their tricks, usually, were to poke fun at us humans, delighting in our gullibility. They only became violent and malicious if they were disrespected. But if treated with respect, they would often, in their own way, find ways to protect the humans that they played with, often with a slightly mischievous twist. So with the rise of technology and electronics, it makes sense that these prankster spirits would make the move as well. This is a prankster type of tech spirit called the Gleet, and they pick their targets well. The Gleets choose humans with technical proficiency and intelligence, techies that can roll with the punches. The Gleet don't mess with noobs or Luddites. Their more malicious cousins, the Gremlins, do that. The Gleet are responsible for the accidental forgetting of a semicolon when writing a program, or when Adobe Flash crashes in the middle of an export. Waiting for an important file to download and your network speed drops to almost nothing? There's a Gleet kinking the network cable. Bet she's giggling, too. Lulz. But the Gleet know not to push a joke too far, as they have a sort of affection for their humans. So catastrophic instances often come with a good reason. A computer's power supply fails. 5 minutes later, when the human has unplugged their computer and walked away, lightning strikes the tree next door, arcing to the home and causing a massive power surge, frying a bunch of electronics. The human may have been electrocuted too if he was still at the computer. Disk drive fails to read a disk, preventing the user from ripping a new CD to MP3s. Turns out that the music publisher put a nasty rootkit on the disk for security purposes. No one messes with the Gleet's humans but them. As with most spirits, offerings are expected. The last sip of an energy drink, the few small remaining pieces of beef jerky, and the last few pieces of popcorn or potato chips are standard offerings to the Gleet, usually found scattered among the detritus of the user's desk. Variants, depending on the human's diet, are fine. But the food usually consumed during crunch time or that final all-night or other faves. They also enjoy silly and random notepad doodles that folks make while brainstorming. So once in a while, leave your scratch pad out for them to flip through, and you may find the solution to your problem jotted in the margin the next morning. So if a Gleet has taken a shining to you, consider yourself luckier than most. Your life is going to be interesting, at times frustrating, but you'll come out on top 99% of the time. Just do your best to be respectful of them, or else the banana shark will be the least of your worries.
Nice.
I like
nice.
It.
Yeah, for people that don't know the banana shark, that is an error message that comes up when you are specifically, I think it was Unix or Linux, I can't remember exactly, but a picture of a banana shark will come up and say, yeah, we know what you're trying to do. We're not allowing you to do it. This is an illegal operation, mostly done by hackers. So I'm not kidding. It's one of the funniest error messages I've ever seen.
It's probably Unix then.
Yeah. So. Well, Unix or Linux. Yeah. I couldn't remember. So. All right, Zen, take us home.
All right. So this is actually, you'll see something here that I did just for you. The hangman's noose. This old thick hemp rope is about a dozen feet in length. One end is frayed and unraveling a touch. The other is an expertly tied hangman's noose. At first glance, it's just another one, something you might see in any sheriff's office. It is closer inspections that elements of this rope seem off. Intertwined in the rope is a gold thread, also a silver thread. There's also a thread of some sort of blue material that shimmers like metal, but isn't. Then on each of the hoops of the noose itself is a name in what appears to be dried blood? Well, all but the last hoop. That one's blank. As you're looking at it, the crack of a pistol firing from the saloon draws your eyes towards it. And as you look back, a name appears from the blood on the hangman's noose.
Oh, yeah. I just had the thing just go up my spine, but it's not that electric tickle. It's more like, you know when someone drops snow down your pants and it goes into your underwear and you'd kind of be like, eh, that weird feeling?
Yeah.
I just had that, but internal.
Nicely done.
Yeah, I was like, I got to come up with something good. I've got to come up with something good. And I actually had, I've got a couple of stat blocks here that I think are pretty tight. So, yeah.
Well, you know, because I mine was due to some of the bull we were dealing with. You know, I started writing it, you know, because I was having issues trying to get the computer working and, you know, me being a techie and stuff like that. You know, so that's why. And then with all the issues we've had before with Zencastr.
Yeah.
I think it fit.
Yeah, it did. It did.
All right, so
let's swing into the next thing.
Lexicon, where we give you cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
All right, teach us stuff.
Teach us stuff. All right, the word for this week is kern. It is a noun, at least this version of it, that we're going to be talking about today.
K-E-R-N?
Yes.
Oh my God, no. The kerning, no!
Typography?
No, no, no.
We're not talking about kerning. We're talking about kern. And there's actually two definitions for kern. One is a light-armed foot soldier in either medieval Ireland or Scotland. And the second definition is a yokel.
I know a different kern.
Yeah, there's like three different variations on it depending on the time frame, but
the typography is the one I know.
Yeah. That's what most people know. And that's spacing between letters and
yeah. And just because of how certain different fonts function and you learn the kerning issues and now you've seen it and you can't unsee it and it's forever.
Okay.
I hate people.
Yeah.
There's a reason that I'm a fan of serifs.
Yeah. So the origin and etymology is it is actually Middle English in the word is kern, basically, which just with an E. And then it's actually from Middle Irish, which is Sathern, which is a band of soldiers. And its first known use was the 15th century.
I like the word Sathern better.
It's because it's Irish. It's a bit to the Irish. No. I don't do an Irish accent.
You should stop now.
That's what I'm saying. I don't do an Irish accent. I just stopped.
I don't let Zippy listen to accents because he will innately adopt them and he can't drop them.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. So, that's gonna wrap us up. We're just going to run through some shout-outs here. So...
You go first this time.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
You went last with the stat block. Come on.
Okay.
It's only fair. All right,
fine. I have actually been watching the second season of Zoo on Netflix. And Zoo is actually kind of an interesting idea. Some of the actors are really good. The idea is basically there is a mutation that occurs in animals. And this mutation causes really bizarre things that they can do. But the animals are basically starting to revolt against mankind and trying to kill them all. And the third season just dropped like today, I think. I had just finished the second season and I'm like, hooray, I can work on getting through Gotham now. And then it was like, I got one day through. And then it was like, here's a whole third season that you haven't watched yet. And I'm just like, crap. So, yeah, I'm going to probably be starting that here soon. But up through season two, it's fun. It's the science is, it's TV science. So there's just enough to make it feel like it's real science without being too much.
Mildly plausible, you mean?
No. It's like, you know, CSI science.
Insert techno babble
here. Yeah. It's not real. The science isn't actual. The theories behind it are theoretical. And I understand it because of what I was going to school for. So I get what they're trying to do, but I'm going, no, no, you were doing that wrong. You're totally doing that wrong too. And oh my God, I'm just going to stop. But it's fun. It's fun.
Actually,
Jules, what you got?
Fun. I hate you all.
I know. It's so good.
All right. Well, because we are in the Halloween season, I'm going to be recommending probably one of the biggest... I ain't being PC. This show is a mind fuck. All right? It's called Gantz. G-A-N-T-Z. It's a Japanese anime and is probably one of the most disturbing... It's not disturbing in the berserk kind of way. This is probably one of the biggest mind screws I have ever watched. It's people wake up and there's this thing just sitting in a room. They're all sitting in a room. No one knows what exactly is going on in the beginning, sort of. And it's this kind of weird machine thing and... You know, people go out, there's stuff going on, and they go out, and then everyone's gunned down for something because of a certain situation, and then they're back in this room with this weird machine thing, and it's gory, it's violent, and you really don't know exactly what's going on. It takes a bit to get there, and it's, you know, watch more than just the first episode. The first episode is kind of like, it takes about 2 to 3 episodes to get in. But, man, I have never been more disturbed. But I loved it.
Okay. Nice.
All right, go to manger. Take us home.
Since we're talking about horror and we're talking about kind of what it is and what is out there, I wanted to choose something that actually looked at the tropes of popular culture horror. So I'm going to recommend that you watch The Cabin in the Woods from 2012. Which includes, among other things, Chris Hemsworth and Sigourney Weaver. The Cabin in the Woods takes the idea of so many of those horror movies and stories that we grew up with in the 80s and the 90s, so lovingly rendered in Stranger Things, and kind of deconstructs them and looks at what the genre needs and why. And I think it's a really engaging and fun take on what some nice. Of the iconography of the popular culture nice. Around horror can be.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
I'm here for the wordy bits.
Yeah, it's...
You're damn good at it, my friend. You're damn good at it.
Some fun stuff in there, so... Yeah. Well, I think that kind of wraps us... For this show, and I guess we will see you guys all next week.
Sleep tight.
Don't let the bed bugs bite.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zendead,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at Mo Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at SeizeTheGM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zendead@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0, Unported License.